This poem is by Naomi Shihab Nye. It is entitled Red Brocade. The Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, feed him for 3 days before asking who he is, where he's come from, where he's headed. That way, he'll have strength enough to answer. Or by then, you'll be such good friends you don't care. Let's go back to that. Rice? Pine nuts? Here, take the red brocade pillow. My child will serve water to your horse. No, I was not busy when you came. I was not preparing to be busy. That's the armor everyone puts on to pretend they had a purpose in the world. I refuse to be claimed. Your plate is waiting. We will snip fresh mint into your tea. We are one. As a Unitarian Universalist, I believe that with every ounce of my being. The people gathered in this sanctuary and the children in our religious education program, we are one. The people who we know well and the people whose names we have yet to know, people who call this region home and people who live in other parts of the globe, we are one. More than that, as Unitarian Universalists, we believe it's not just people who matter, but all living beings. Our seventh principle, we are part of an interdependent web of life. Now, even though I believe this spiritual truth, it is difficult in practice. It's not always clear how to be a good neighbor. I was reminded of this one winter day when I was taking the tea. I live in Cambridge, and so Harvard is my nearest tea stop. I settled comfortably in a seat on a red line train. The train was full of people heading inbound. At Central, a young white man burst into the train wearing a torn jacket. "I gotta get a coat. Please, somebody help me." He described a fight that had happened in the homeless shelter. Some guy who'd ripped his coat in two. He spun around, showing his tattered coat, split right up the back and the filling falling out. "You know it's going to be cold tonight." I opened up my wallet and gave him $5, and several other people in the train did the same. A middle-aged black woman spoke out with contempt, not at the young man, but at me. "Do you know what you did? He's going to shoot up that money. I know that guy. I work in social services. You just gave him money to get high." She shook her head in disgust. Her words felt like a punch in the stomach. Had I actually harmed this man instead of helping? Contributing to drug money does not feel as generous as helping to buy a new coat. Would it have been better if I had just turned away? Pretended that I didn't see him, that I did not hear his cry for help. These are dilemmas that we all face. Even if we do not have change to spare, we have the choice whether or not to see the person asking for help as our neighbor or to turn away. Often, not always, when I have change to spare, I give. Knowing that what's done with the money is their choice. You see, it made an impression on me at a young age. A dear family friend named Helen Goodman. She was a social worker, and she was just this small woman with an enormous heart. She always brought a whole stack of dollar bills with her when we met in Harvard Square, and she would hand them out, and then she would shrug with a twinkle in her eye and say, "So he may go buy a drink. Who am I to say what he needs?" The parable of the Good Samaritan is familiar to most of us. A priest and a Levite, two esteemed members of society, passed by a man who's been left mugged and beaten by robbers. However, a Samaritan, a person looked down upon in Jesus' times, went out of his way to care for the stranger. It is no question that if I were in trouble, I could only hope that someone like the Samaritan would pass by to bandage my wounds, to bring me to safety, and even pay my expenses. And this parable now is so well known that the word Samaritan does not just mean someone from Samaria now. It means someone who is ready and generous in helping others, someone who treats all who cross their path with the kindness of a neighbor or a friend. In the 1970s, Darley and Batson conducted a psychological experiment to see if there was a link between personality traits and the likelihood of helping others. The experiment was conducted at Princeton Theological Seminary with seminary students, I'll look at Jan, who were told that they were participating in a study about religious education and vocation. And the first stage of the study was to fill out a personality questionnaire on your religious beliefs. You see, one hypothesis of Darley and Batson was to see whether people who are religious for what it will gain them might be less likely to help than those who value religion for its own sake or who are seeking for meaning in life. So after they completed those questionnaires in individual sessions, the seminarians were then sent to another building in which they were to give an oral presentation. And before heading on their way, half the subjects were given the parable of the Good Samaritan, and they were told, you're going to give a sermon on the subject. And then the other half were told, just, you know, speak off the cuff about job prospects for seminary students. I'll look at Jan again. Now, the other variable in this experiment was a condition of time. As they set off for the building, some of the subjects were told that they were late. Others were told they were just on time, and others were told that they had time to spare. Now, the real behavior of interest occurred when the seminarians traveled from one building to the next. In an alleyway, Darley and Batson had placed a man slumped in a doorway. His head was down, his eyes were closed, and the psychologists describe him as an ambiguous figure. He could have been injured or drunk. He, like the man on the road to Jericho, except he was fully clothed. Now, as each subject passed, this ambiguous figure moaned and coughed twice. So, what do you think they discovered? 60% of the seminarians walked on without offering help. Those preparing to preach on the parable of the Good Samaritan were no more likely to stop than those speaking on another subject. In fact, some seminarians actually stepped over the man on their way to preach about the Good Samaritan. The personality profiles revealed no characteristics or religious beliefs that predicted the helping behavior. The only thing that seemed to make a difference was the condition of time. Only a small fraction who were told they were late stopped to offer help, 10%. While 63% who thought they had time to spare offered assistance. So now, if these seminary students preparing for a helping profession like ministry, some actually on their way to speak on the timeless message of aiding one's neighbor, did not stop, how much more likely is it that you and I might fail to notice or fail to take action when we encounter someone in need of help. The conclusion to this study was that the ethical behavior can be viewed as a luxury as the speed of life increases. I do not want to live in a world like that. I know that you do not want to live in a world like that. Given our essential unity, I would go so far as saying that no one wants to live in a world where a person in trouble is ignored. And this is why the president's executive order suspending the entire U.S. refugee admission system is so alarming. Our nation already has one of the most rigorous vetting regimens in the world. When national security is prioritized over liberty, our culture shifts from a model of freedom and compassion to isolation and hostility. It is essential for us to join with other people of conscience in resisting the idea of immigration as a threat. Like one of our children wrote on a sign for the Women's March, "Build kindness, not walls." It is essential that we stand on the side of love in these difficult times. This is not a new problem. After all, Jesus was teaching about it 2,000 years ago. The parable of the Good Samaritan was his response to a lawyer who asks, "Who is my neighbor?" The biblical story is set on a road to Jericho, which is an actual route of 17 miles. Jericho Road was known as a hazardous trip because of a significant drop in elevation and because robbers were often there getting ready to attack passersby. In the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., "One day the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that men and women will not be beaten and robbed as they make their journey through life. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It understands that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring." End quote. And this is how the Jericho Road Project got its name. I'm curious who here in this congregation has been part of the Jericho Road Project. Look around, because that program was actually founded by, that program was founded here by this congregation, First Parish in Concord, and it has spinoffs now in Roxbury, Worcester, Pasadena, and Dallas. In the current political climate, I know many of us are longing for ways to make a difference. For those of you who are less familiar, I just want to let you know that it is a tremendous opportunity. You see, volunteers with Jericho Road don't just do busy work. The director takes time to meet with you to find out what are your skills. How much time do you have? And they figure out a time-limited project so that you can amplify the efforts of a nonprofit in Lowell. So I recommend that to you as a possibility to make time for service. We put our values into practice, expanding our understanding what it means to be a neighbor. Now, when Howard was going to deliver a sermon on a similar but not exactly the same topic, one of the things that he wanted to lift up that I did not want to fail to mention is that if you yourself are struggling to make ends meet, we have a fund available to help members of First Parish who are in need. The Holden Fund was established at First Parish in 1901 when Ellen Emerson contributed $3,500 in honor of Nancy Holden, quote, "for daughters taking care of mothers in straitened circumstances." Now today, the fund is awarded to those supporting caregivers. And if you'd like to learn more about this, I invite you to speak to Marion or to Howard when he returns. Several years ago, I attended a training called Who Are Our Neighbors? It is designed for Unitarian Universalist ministers. You see, although we have been on the forefront of the civil rights movement, many of our congregations do not reflect our values. Beyond saying all are welcome or Black Lives Matter, how can we create a religious community where all people feel fully seen and honored? That's a question our association has been wrestling with for a long time, and ministers have been asked to be a part of a training program in intercultural competency. What is that? It starts by recognizing that each one of us has a culture. We have a certain lens and perspective in which we interact and view the world. We have certain assumptions about what is right and wrong, the proper ways to behave, and sometimes that puts us into conflict with other people, whether we mean to or not. So the more that we ourselves understand our own culture, our own assumptions about the world and behavior, the more likely we are to be open to other cultures that we encounter, and our neighbors often do come from different cultures. I want you to think for a moment back to your most recent Thanksgiving meal. Several people mentioned to me that it was a little tense because there might have been different views about politics around that table. But I also want you to think about who was the host, who were the guests, who set the code of behavior. I offer that to you as a reflection tool to think about where you're coming from and what particular lens your family of origin or your chosen family might be providing you at this time. What if, instead of expecting people to do things our way, we intentionally open ourselves to experiencing new ways, relationships, and connections? This would mean being vulnerable to making mistakes, but it also can lead to amazing discoveries. Let us live with open and generous hearts, taking the time to notice people who cross our path and reaching out to one another with compassion. This is the kind of world that we can only create together. Blessed be.